on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk, another episode of InvestTalk, and we are hurling towards the fourth quarter, just a couple weeks left in the month, and there's always a lot going on in markets, and we're here to unpack it all for you, answer your finance and investment questions, giving you data and perspective that you can bring back to your own personal situation and make better decisions with your money. That's what the show is about each and every weekday. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin. I'm calling today about, I think it's a brand new Stillwater, ticker symbol SESW. I've owned the stock for quite a while now, and if you could let me know if the stock is worth holding on to at all, or if I should just get rid of it and move on to something better. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, looking at SBSW is the symbol, Sibanye Stillwater, and this is out of South Africa. It's a name that was in a long downtrend from the highs in 2021 when it was in the high teens, and then it fell all the way down to a recent low at $3.05. But it is now in an uptrend. Its relative strength is 95, and it is all the way up to $8.62. So still well off those 2021 highs, but clearly well off the lows as well. And that's because they lost a bunch of money in 2023, about $2.92. And they're supposed to make 72 cents this year and 95 cents next year. So based on forward-looking earnings, you're talking about a 9P multiple. So that looks pretty good, okay? But the issue is that they have, they're a miner. They're in the mining space. They mine platinum group metals, gold, and the value of, I believe their main, let's see what their main metal is, palladium. And this is what goes into catalytic converters. And I was worried that, you know, this would, in the era of electric cars, the demand for this end product would go down. And to a degree it has, but also the growth of electric cars have been slower than I think most people have expected. Now, China has come in and they're starting to really ramp up production in a big way. But the death of the internal combustion engine, I think, is a little bit ways off. So what you've seen recently is a lot of these group metals are starting to rally, as well as gold. They also mine copper, chrome, nickel, iridium, etc. And that's all rallying, especially with the weaker dollar. So the current trend is strong, and frankly, I would continue to hold it. A lot does depend on your other exposure, but overall, I like having the diversity of this name. It's a foreign name. There's getting more money being thrown at that area of the market, as well as just the base metals are starting to really break out. So frankly, the trends are strong. The valuation is fine. Let me look at their balance sheet. Yeah, their balance sheet is relatively strong as well. So I would continue to hold SBSW for diversity stake and the fact that, you know, their business is improving pretty rapidly. Thanks for the call. Let's go take a live call. Sid from North Carolina looking at Google.
Hi, Justin. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call, and I hope I am not too late. Belated happy birthday to you.
Thank you so much.
I think it must have gone right by.
Yeah, it was last Thursday. Yep.
Thursday. We both have the same, so don't worry. Thank you so much. I want to ask about Google. I do have position, and it is at good profit, around 60-70%. Not more than, now with including profit, not more than 6-7% of my portfolio. So do you think I should hold more knowing that it is just going up and up, or is 60-70% profit on this name is good enough for me to take the profit off the table?
Well,
or should I trim half and leave half?
Yeah. Yeah, well, 6-7%, it is getting a pretty hefty portion of your portfolio. So I might trim it a little bit after this recent run, but I wouldn't be selling a ton, especially I'd worry about tax consequences of any of its short-term. I would try to wait for long-term gains. Google is, it's rallied pretty extensively since the April lows. It bottomed around, what's this, $142. Now it's at $251. So that's quite the rally. And if you look at earnings next year, so it's supposed to be $10.67, $251 stock. It's about a 25 multiple, certainly higher than the average, but it has a good balance sheet, obviously very profitable. And it is heavily reliant on advertising. And so far, with the economy taking a stair step down in growth, but still growing, the ad market still is relatively strong. Now, there are some long-term threats to Google with AI and potentially usurping some of their search activity. But I think they've done a good job of building in Gemini to their natural search process. And that is, I think, stems some of the tide of people moving to AI for search. Not completely, but to a degree. So I think there's still a player there. They also have stakes in things like Waymo and other kind of side projects they've been working on for a long time that I think has a lot of long-term growth potential. So it is a bit hefty. I would probably trim it to maybe 5% of your portfolio in that range, but I wouldn't be aggressively cutting it because the valuations, while they're a little bit elevated, they're not super stretched. And frankly, the stock's in a strong uptrend, even though it's a little bit overbought right now. So I could see a modest pullback into the low 200s, but ultimately it's in an uptrend. It has a great business. And I think the threats from AI are there, but they're not coming to fruition at the current time. So I would still give Google, Alphabet in this case, Alphabet, a thumbs up to hold as probably 5% of your portfolio.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now we're moving into a break. On the other side, I will preview today's topics and look at today's market activity. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new Invest Talk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7, how to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. They'll be talking about the energy grid, data center infrastructure, and how AI is boosting profits in a wide range of industries. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com. There's value in every InvestTalk podcast, so call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the TrueAge plus TrueHealth test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The TrueAge plus TrueHealth test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. TrueHealth looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. TrueAge measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so. And our main focus point is about the millionaire mindset and how successful people think about money. I do think this is an underappreciated topic, and that's why we want to discuss it. It's not always just about the X's and the O's of investing or saving. A lot of it is having the proper mindset to build wealth. And ultimately, that's what we're all trying to do, is build and grow our wealth, not just our income, but our all overall wealth. So we're going to look at that story. In addition, I have other topics on the docket. One is in regards to mortgage rates. They are starting to fall. We're now at the lowest level since early last year on mortgage rates, and we'll talk about what's driving that. In addition, President Trump wants to do away with quarterly earnings and go to something that's more semi-annual. And we'll look at what that might ultimately mean for markets and the integrity of markets and the safety of markets as well. And if we have time, I'll talk about what makes a winning 401k. So we'll look at that too. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions. So give us a call anytime. We have voice bank questions. One is on stock support, as well as Biogen IDEC, BIIB is the symbol, as well as I think we have one question that came from the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. So don't hesitate to reach out. Once again, the number is always 888-99-CHART. Now let's go take a look at the markets today. It was overall a modest red day for markets. You had the NASDAQ down 7 basis points, 15 total points. S&P was down 8 points, about 13 basis points there. And the Dow was down about 0.25%. So a broad-based sell-off, but nothing too extreme. Utilities definitely were the worst. Took the brunt of the sell-off. But you had kind of a mixed bag on the Mag 7. You had NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Broadcom, and Palantir down. But you had Apple, Meta, and Tesla, and Amazon up. Google was roughly flat. Oracle up 1.4% there. And what other sectors did poorly? Not really many other sectors did poorly. It was really driven by utilities. And the rest was kind of a mixed bag. Yeah, I guess financials certainly were weaker. Overall, a lot of the insurance companies struggled a bit. Some credit card companies, Schwab down again. Morgan Stanley weak. Most of the big banks were roughly flat. So that was, from a sector perspective, how the market moved. The dollar index was down 0.6% today. The worst daily performance since August of 2022. Gold finished up 0.2% on the day. Bitcoin was up 1.3%. And you had oil up 1.9% on the day. You did have some news out of the appeals court around the firing of Fed Governor Cook. And as was kind of expected, they said that President Trump, based on the grounds that he stated, did not have authority to fire that Fed governor. And so she will remain on the board for the meeting tomorrow. And that will be likely a market-moving event in some capacity. The base case is a quarter of a point cut, but ultimately it's really going to be about whether or not they signal towards more cuts throughout the end of the year and into 2026 as well. Retail sales, that was up 0.6% month over month in August. That was in line with the July number as well. Consensus was 0.6%, so certainly beat consensus. Okay, and what were the other numbers that we saw? That was the main number on that side. I think that was kind of it. So the consumer remains relatively robust and just shows you that, well, we are taking a stair step lower in overall economic growth over the past 3-4 months, it's not pushing us into a recession. It's just a downshifting. I don't know if any of you know how to drive a stick shift. I remember my second car was a stick shift. And that's kind of the market's doing now. It's just downshifting. Now let's pivot over and answer a question that came from a web form from investtalk.com. And Jose Cruz says, hello, I noticed these new ETFs that pay a weekly dividend. What is your take on the strategy? What are the risks involved? Thank you. I will listen on the podcast. I love this question because it's one of those average investor mistakes that just focuses on the dividend and they say, oh, the more I get paid, the better. And that just goes along with the higher the dividend yield, the better. That's not always the case. Dividends, whether they're paid monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, annually, it doesn't matter. They need to come from consistent cash flows of the business or businesses that it is investing in. So a lot of these ETFs they might be paying monthly, but how sustainable are the businesses within that ETF, the portfolio that it is investing in? A lot of times, especially ones that pay high dividends, those are dividend traps. And over time, the dividends get cut individually and they're just underlying price of the stocks go down as well. And so you want to avoid that. So don't think just because it pays quarterly or monthly, that automatically makes it a good investment. It's about the underlying portfolio that it's invested in. And that's what you should focus on more. Now we're moving to a break, still to come. My focus point and more answers to your questions, and I encourage you to call right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every Invest Talk podcast. Call anytime. 24/7 Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, our main focus point is about the millionaire mindset and how really successful people think about money and ultimately build wealth. And that is the goal. It's not just about income. It's about building wealth. Now, when you're in your younger days, it's really typically focused on that income. You know, you go from earning next to nothing and, you know, how do I get to a six-figure salary, for example, and then iterations from there. But those, as you get older, those that are trying to really have the right mindset are focused more on building wealth. And it's more than just numbers in your bank account. It's how you do things like spend your time, where you work, and who you work with, and who you interact with on a daily basis. Wealth, ultimately, and this is why we talk about financial freedom, it's about freedom, flexibility, and space to build a life that you want. And ultimately, money will do things like fuel the growth. It'll create stability, so that you can take risks that make sense based on what is presented to you. We all have opportunities throughout our lives to take a risk. I know I have, and a lot of those have paid off. But once again, it's about taking smart risks, not just any risks. But money and assets and income allows us to endeavor in those risks that feel like good risks versus rewards based on the analysis. So really, wealth is about creating sustainable value in your portfolio, whether that's your portfolio of friends and social connections, or your portfolio of stocks, or maybe private companies. Or maybe the business that you run or businesses that you run. So how do you do this? Well, number one, it's focusing on building assets. assets that will pay you long after you work. That isn't just based on the hours that you apply to a particular endeavor. They'll pay you consistently, whether that is owning real estate, owning a company, owning equities, bonds, whatever that is. It's about accumulating those assets. Number two is, I think, the most challenging for most people, and that is focusing on data. Making decisions based on data, not on emotions. It's very easy to get caught up in the emotions of life. We are emotional beings. And there can be side benefits or side factors to making any investment decision or any financial decision, really. And a lot of times people allow those side benefits to distract from the raw data-driven decision-making that should be taking place. So make sure that when you are making these decisions, that they're about long-term profitability and growth of your wealth. Number three is surround yourself with the right people. Whether it's advisors, mentors, or just people you work with. In order to achieve the things that you want to achieve, you're going to need to learn lessons both the hard way, that's usually no fun, but most importantly, the easy way, which is speaking with people that have learned the hard way, that can impart some knowledge and some experience into your situation so that you can avoid pitfalls and capitalize on opportunities. So you want to be around people that expand your perspective and also keep you accountable. So your network is extremely important to building wealth. Number four, reinvestment. So just because you make money off of something or you have a stream of income because of an asset you acquired, doesn't mean that you stop there. You need to reinvest it to create that compound growth. And then lastly, think long term. Yes, you want to achieve small wins, but you need to make sure that those wins are aligned with your long term goals. And so these strategic moves are more important than just that one rewarding sale that you might make. Okay. So really, a millionaire mindset is about adopting these consistent habits and creating a foundation for making consistent, smart decisions, not just with your investments like we do here on Invest Talk, but in your entire financial life. So hopefully this helped you kind of refocus, and maybe it'll help you take that next step in building your financial wealth. Now, next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic, AI versus human. Can you trust a robot with your money? We'll dig into that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and we're ready to take your calls right now on Invest Talk at 888-99-SHARK. Have you ever had a breakthrough moment working on something that wouldn't let you stop thinking until you got to the bottom of it? I bet you've experienced that situation more than once. Let me tell you how we use Claude. We use Claude to build widgets on our website and to build a data dashboard using data from various information sources. Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you, not for you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Claude doesn't just give us answers. It helps us think through the problem. Claude's internal and external research capabilities go way deeper than basic web search. Think comprehensive, reliable analysis with proper citations for clients, turning hours of research into minutes. For example, Claude found connections across 50 plus sources, that we never would have spotted ourselves. With Claude AI, you can connect to your work tools and data, create custom workflows, and benefit from extended thinking mode that maintains context and understanding throughout extensive conversations. Claude is for everyone: financial services, education, AI agents, and coders. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Sign up for Claude today and get 50% off Claude Pro when you use my link, claude.ai/invest. That's claude.ai/invest right now for 50% off your first 3 months of Claude Pro. That includes access to all the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/invest.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right, you'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Paul in Dallas, and I just have a general question for you. Oftentimes, you will say that a stock doesn't have support until it gets to a certain range. And when you say support, what are you referring to? What are the parameters, or what are the things that are offering the support at a certain level? I will listen on the podcast. I love the show. Thanks, guys.
Well, great question. And there can be multiple factors that cause a stock to have good support. It can be things like previous breakout areas. So when a stock had previously traded at in a particular range, and then it breaks out of that range, there are a lot of people, especially short sellers, that are stuck. Right? It goes up, breaks out of that range, and it is now a losing trade for that short seller. But then stock might roll over and get back to the level, and suddenly it is back to even. And you know how the average person is. Well, when you get back to even at a loss, a lot of people will sell it, and that will create resistance level when somebody owns it. But when somebody has shorted it, that's also now a support level where they have to buy the stock back. So there can be that. There's also things like Fibonacci retracements. That's a common pattern that you'll see in markets, right? You can study that more, but it basically tends to be good support at certain Fibonacci levels. A lot of times what I like to see is both Fibonacci levels as well as previous breakout areas. Those can be quite powerful when it comes to support. It can also be a previous bottom where buyers had stepped in before, and most likely those buyers will step in again because the stock will be cheap enough, and that can cause support as well. So there's multiple factors. It's all technical analysis. It's part of our process. We have a three-pronged process when we're looking at buying or selling a security. Number one is broader economy, growth, inflation, what type of sectors tend to outperform or underperform. Number two is bottom-up, called micro analysis, and that is what companies in the sector have the best growth prospects, balance sheets, profitability, valuation, etc. And then we're picking those names as well. And then you add in the technical analysis. So that is the three-pronged approach that we have. And that's when I'm saying stock support, I'm looking at the technical analysis side. Now let's keep things going and make it two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Jeremy from Tucson. A question about Biogen, BIIB. I'd like to know your thoughts about it. Thank you.
All right, Biogen IDEC, and this is a name that's been in a long downtrend. It historically was a strong grower. It earned $33.57 in 2019 pre-pandemic, and pretty much it's fallen apart since then. It's had a decline in earnings in 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023. Last year did bounce back 12% in earnings, but still to $16.47, which is roughly half of what it earned in 2019. And that's the big issue. And that's why it continues on this big downtrend. Now, Biogen IDEC is a biotech company, $21 billion market cap. And It still remains. Let me look at its profitability real quick. It's the return on equity is still good, still solid, 9%, but not amazing anymore. You know, back in 2020, its return on equity is 46%. 2016, it was 35%. Now it's down to 9%. And that is really the issue. Just a degradation in its overall profit margins and profitability. 2015, return on assets was 24%. Now it's down to 5%. You look at its operating margins are 24%, and it peaked out in 2016 around 44%. So profitability has just eroded consistently. Now the good news is its balance sheet is still pretty solid. Only about $3, $4 billion in net debt on its balance sheet. That's a good thing. It's been buying back shares over the past decade, but that's kind of slowed to a trickle recently. That's because its cash flow has fallen from a high of $6.2 billion in 2019, $6.4 billion in 2019, all the way down to $1.85 billion recently. So on a $21 billion market cap, that's about a 9% free cash flow yield. That's pretty good. But the growth is just not there. In fact, earnings this year are supposed to fall again 4%, and next year only go flat to $15.81. So there's a reason it's trading for a 9 P ratio, is because there's no growth. No growth businesses tend to trade at very low multiples. So the question would be, is there a catalyst for this to turn around? And frankly, I'm not seeing it. The market isn't pricing that in. Analysts aren't expecting that to reverse either. Morningstar has it as a narrow moat. That's a good thing. But overall, you're just not seeing the growth in the business. And so I think if you're looking in the biotech space or the pharma space, there are just better options out there. So I would pass on BIIB. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about mortgage rates and long-term bond yields are starting to drift a bit lower on a Fed easing cycle, as well as rising risks of a recession. Now, once again, it's rising. It's not pricing in a recession, but as I've said before, we're taking a stair step lower in growth in the economy, but it's not recessionary, but that does mean we're just closer to recession. So you're getting long-term rates to come down a little bit. And based on Mortgage News Daily, it looks like the mortgage rate is now down to 6.29% as of Friday. Let me see if I get an update here. Mortgage News Daily. That was as of Friday, so could be a little bit old. We are all the way down to 6.13. Wow, quite the move since Friday. So why is this happening? Well, the first is the spread between mortgage bonds and treasuries is starting to decline pretty rapidly. In fact, in April of this year, the spread was about 1.64%. Now that spread is down to 1.2%. Okay, so it's about a 50 basis point decline just in the spread. And that's not including the drop in mortgage rates or in the 10-year treasury rate overall. And that is always a proxy for mortgage rates. Now, why is this happening? Well, the first is that Fannie and Freddie, they package up loans and they sell them. And they've standardized bonds in half point buckets or coupon levels. So a bond at 6%, then at 5.5, and then so on. And mortgage rates at higher rates are more likely to get refinanced and paid back earlier. So in many ways, these mortgage buyers like to see a little bit lower yields because there's less chance that they will be refinanced. Okay, and so you're starting to see a little bit more interest in buying these bonds, and suddenly that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you have more demand for the bonds, well, then that naturally pushes bond rates lower because there's more buyers for the underlying bonds. Okay. And there's been a shift in investor preferences to a lot of these mortgages that are in the 5.25% to 6% range. Okay. And in recent years, banks have been buying fewer bonds. And what you're starting to see is more conviction that longer term rates are going to head lower. And you know, the bigger worry was that rates were going to break out. That would cause a potential recession, et cetera. And more duration risk was a bad thing. Well, as rates come down, well, ironically, more people feel comfortable buying these longer term bonds, even though naturally there's more duration risk the lower the coupon is and the longer the duration that they're investing in. Remember what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and a lot of these banks a couple years back when rates were rising considerably? They were all trying to limit their duration risk. Now they are going back into buying duration. And ultimately, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy when they are buying these longer dated bonds. So it's a self-reinforcing loop. And, you know, and that once again, that increases risk. But clearly, banks are becoming more comfortable with that risk as well. So that's what's driving down the mortgage rates overall. And frankly, I think we're pretty close to the end of this recent move. I don't think mortgage rates are going to go down too much more. Like I said, we're approaching the 6% level, 6.13 today. And, you know, could we see a 5 handle? Absolutely. But I don't think we're going to see a 4 handle. Let's just say that in this cycle. So that's where we're at. Certainly pricing in a Fed easing cycle and more demand for these longer dated bonds. Now let's talk about InvestTalk Innovators. And it's a new series on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And Luke and I will bring you insightful interviews with company leaders, founders, and visionaries. In our first episode, Luke spoke with Haran Bhakta, and it's about insider ownership. He's the mind behind insider ownership, and it highlights how investing in founder-led businesses can offer a real advantage in your investing game. And he offers some practical tips for you to take home. So you can head over there and watch the full interview by heading to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and stay tuned for more conversations with the InvestTalk innovators. And then we have a new episode, I believe, coming out this week. So be on the lookout for that. So let's swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a call that came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Is it wise or even legal to have several IRA accounts? Or what is the best way to set up accounts to invest from? Anyway, appreciate everything you guys do. Love the show. And I look forward to hearing the answer. Have a good one.
Technically, you can have as many IRA accounts as you want. IRAs, Roth IRAs, SEP IRAs, whatever IRA account you want to set up. It's all about contributions. Which ones can you contribute based on your income? Which ones should you invest in based on your tax rate, for example, all of that. And that's more of a question for your tax advisor than anything else. But you can have as many IRAs as you want. Now, is that wise? Well, from a management standpoint, that can be very difficult, right? So if you have IRAs at different brokerage firms, having a cohesive strategy can be very difficult. And then you have 401ks potentially. And so we always try to do is consolidate our clients' IRAs. Obviously, you don't want to put an IRA into a Roth IRA, right? You want to keep traditional IRAs with traditional IRAs, consolidate those. Roth IRAs consolidate with other Roth IRAs or Roth 401ks, et cetera. So make sure the tax treatment is the same and try to consolidate them as much as possible. Probably at the same broker as well. Whether that's Schwab or Fidelity or E-Trade or any of the bigger ones, we would probably recommend one of those. And then be able to effectively build a strategy when they're all at one place and you can monitor the overall holdings. So I would try to consolidate even if it's legal to have as many as you want. Now let's go and pivot back to a voice bank call at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. I love your show. This is Enrique from San Diego. My question is PBA, Pembina Pipeline Corporation. I'm looking to pick some up. I would love to hear your feedback. Thank you very much.
All right. Looking at PBA is the symbol. This is a pipeline company out of Canada, and it's been performing fairly well as of late. It's rallied from a low. It was this around $35. $34 is the 52-week low. Now it's up to about $39 and change, but a 5% dividend yield. What I like about this is that it's not a limited partnership like a lot of these pipeline companies. It does operate in Canada, where there is a lot of drilling activity and movement of oil and natural gas, et cetera. And so they make, it's like a toll. They charge a toll to move the product through their pipelines. And that tends to be a very consistent, solid business. Return equity right around 11%, which is good, not amazing, but pretty solid. And that's right around the long-term average. You look at its debt, it does have about $11 billion in debt on $22 billion market cap. So it's a decent amount, but based on its cash flow of $1.8 billion, it's not really a worry overall. Long-term debt at 9.8, and that has kind of flattened out over the past few years, which is good, which means that their payout ratio of 94% and cash dividend pay ratio of 66% is leaving enough cash left over to sustain their debt, as well as they're not buying back shares, but they're not issuing a whole lot of shares recently as well. So I generally like these type of businesses. However, earnings are supposed to fall 29% this year to $2.13, but then bounce back a little bit next year. It is a bit elevated based on those metrics. If you're talking about price to P ratio, if I look at price to free cash flow, it's about 12.5. And historically, that is on the lower end of the range, which I certainly like. So overall, I'm going to give PBA a thumbs up. I like the dividend of 5%. That is, looks sustainable based on its business and consistent cash flow. And they have a solid balance sheet as well. So I'm giving PBA a thumbs up. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and it's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new Invest Talk Wealth Webinar, Beyond the Mag 7. How to identify AI opportunities across sectors. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are going to help you move past the familiar names to identify the key opportunities for investment in the real AI revolution. The all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, happening online September 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Seats are limited, so register now at investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Matt in Miami. I just had a question in regards to the copper resolution project. I was doing some research, and besides just that project, I was wanting you guys to compare the two companies, Rio Tinto and BHP, so RIO and BHP. From a financial perspective, Rio seems to be a little more appealing, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on just getting into both of these for a long-term play. I'm 31 years old, so I'd probably hold it for a really long time, as we definitely need copper, like you guys mentioned, with semiconductor use and AI going forward. Thank you very much. Looking forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
Looking at BHP and Rio Tinto and trying to gain exposure to copper, which I like the idea of gaining exposure to copper metal. It's in high demand and it's very difficult and takes a long time to bring on new copper production. So I like that. Problem is that both of these names produce copper, but a lot of other metals as well. So let's start off with BHP. And about 44% of their revenue comes from copper. But that also means 44% of their revenue comes from iron ore. And about 10% of the business or the revenue comes from coal mining, okay? And then a small percentage of other types of metals. So that is BHP. Now it comes to Rio. It's a little bit more diversified. There's a lot of other metals in here. But if you look at its copper revenue, take a look at that. Yeah, it's only about 17%. Of revenue, okay? And then about 6% is bauxite, or 13% is aluminum manufacturing, 7% is aluminum refineries, and 62% is iron ore. So Rio Tinto is about 2/3 of the revenue comes from iron ore, and only 17% comes from copper. So just simply based on that, BHP is the one you would want to own if you're trying to gain exposure to copper. However, it's also not a pure play copper producer. Now, if you want to look at something that's more pure play, you're going to look domestically at the largest copper producer, and that is Freeport-McMoRan. That is still not a pure play. It's 60% copper ore, and then 17% copper-derived manufacturing. So, you know, a similar type of exposure there, 7% in molybdenum, and then about 17%, about 20% in silver and gold. So you're getting a little bit of gold and silver exposure as well. Now, that's just the largest domestic producer. You also have names like Southern Copper. That one, it, once again, is going to be a little bit more of a pure play. About 77% is in copper, and then does have some silver exposure and zinc exposure as well. So what you have to do is do a little deeper dive into these names and understand what is their revenue coming from. A lot of these mining groups have multiple sources, multiple mines with different types of raw materials that they're mining. And they're not, most of them aren't 100% pure play. They have other exposure. But once again, you want, if you're looking for copper exposure, you want more exposure, not it kind of, at least with BHP, it's the same type of exposure to iron ore as you're getting with copper. And iron ore can be even more fickle when it comes to pricing power. And so I'm not loving either Rio Tinto or BHP because they're not pure plays. They're a bit more diversified. You look at their earnings picture, it's a lot more muddled than some of the pure play copper producers. So I'd be looking for that. I'd be looking for pure play copper names in the copper space, not these more diversified names like BHP and Rio. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein. This was another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. And if anything on this show made you think about your own personal situation, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com, schedule a free portfolio review with myself or Luke. Help bring clarity and confidence to whatever plan you have and see what kind of adjustments could be made or should be made. Okay. Independent thinking, showed success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.